I want to make one thing perfectly clear before I get started. The story that I'm about to tell you is pure fiction. Do you believe me? I meet her for the first and last time at Jim's Coffee Shop at the corner of Hildebrand and San Pedro. It's 3:33 in the morning, and the sober-up crowd is starting to give up and head home. She tells me her name is Rachel, and that she's from Akron, and that her feet hurt because she's just spent the last 6 hours dancing without her clothes on at a place called Nice and Easy. She gives me no reason whatsoever to doubt any of this. She glances at my newspaper and asks me what's happening in the world. Well, I say, it looks like there's another civil war on in the Congo. And she just stares at me blankly as if I've answered her in some obscure Albanian dialect. But then, almost absentmindedly, she murmurs, "I seriously doubt that Mobutu will hold on now that Rwanda has thrown their lot with the rebels." Wow, guess I wasn't expecting that. But hey, at 3:33 in the morning, it's a little crazy to expect anything. Then, through a series of conversational segues I couldn't retrace if you put a large gun to my head, she tells me the remarkable story of the events that unfolded on April 13th, 1975, when she lost her virginity to Tommy Maddox in a Motel 6 that Tommy's uncle ran outside of Akron. She still remembers the room number, 203. In her travels since then, she's gone to great lengths to avoid setting foot in any other room 203, once going so far as to sleep in her car at a truck stop in West Memphis, which, it turns out, is in Arkansas, and not Tennessee, like you probably expect. I tell her there are a couple ways to interpret her steering clear of any and all room 203s. Either A, what happened back at the Motel 6 was so fairytale perfect that she doesn't even want to try to recapture the magic of it, or the correct answer is B, she assures me. But somehow, I already knew that. Tommy, she explains, was the proud owner of a beat-up Dodge Ram pickup truck and the complete works of Aerosmith, all the stuff before their regrettable late middle age reunion tour, anyway. These, and an ice chest full of Anheuser-Busch Tallboys, had figured prominently in the dozen or so dates that she and Tommy had gone out on. She summed him up like this: if you're looking for a man whose major life accomplishment is knowing all the lyrics to Toys in the Attic, then Tommy is the man for you. But if I could do it all over again? And she trails off without finishing her thought. Because she can't do it all over again. Or can she? I suppose I could argue it either way. One thing I do know is that in a span of about 20 minutes, this woman drinks 5 cups of regular caffeinated coffee. Black. No sugar. People who do this after 3:30 in the morning have either grown chemically immune to the stuff, or they've got a much longer view of the immediate future than I do. She catches me eyeing her cup, trying to figure out which one she is, and then quickly explains that she needs to stay up all night, as there's been some kind of domestic upheaval back at her house, involving her brother's ex-wife and her sister's ex-husband. The sister's second ex and the brother's ex-sister-in-law are also somewhere in the mix. There are several in-laws, marriages, and divorces involved, and the whole thing is a little tough to follow. But I find myself needing to follow. And I'm just about to ask her to go back to the beginning when, totally out of the blue, because even I didn't see this coming, I tell her that she's welcome to sleep on my couch, if she has nowhere else to go, that is. Now, I should make it perfectly clear that at this point in the story, I'm not exactly sure what my motives are. She doesn't seem too sure about my motives either, because she stares at me for the longest 14 seconds in my natural life and finally says, "Why not?" When we get to my place, she makes no comment about the prevailing disarray that is in effect there. No observations about how the state of my apartment is quite possibly a crystal clear reflection of the state of my mind. Instead, she goes right over to the chaos that is my CD collection, magically plucks out Dinah Washington's Greatest Hits, puts it on, and then turns to me and asks if she can take a bath. And I say, "Make yourself at home." And she does. She goes straight into the bathroom, lights the candles that I have in there, starts running the bath, and then very gently closes the door. And suddenly I'm struck with the uncanny sensation that she's been here before. Or maybe it's just that I've been here before. Even with Dinah singing, I can hear her undressing in the bathroom, hear the various pieces of her clothing fall lightly to the floor, hear her slip into the bath, and hear the warm water silently envelop her. And I just sit there, a room and a world away, thinking about one thing or the other, feeling absolutely nothing but the envy of water. Dinah works her way through all her greats, taking Manhattan, what a difference a day making, and so on. Time speeds up, and then it slows way back down again. Anybody who thinks that time always moves at the same speed simply hasn't lived through enough of it to know any better. Next thing I know, Dinah's coming back home to me, baby, and I realized it's been very quiet inside the bath there for a long time, and that the water must surely be growing cold by now. I start to call out to her, but suddenly her name is gone. Did she ever tell me? And then I start to replay in my mind every moment that I've spent with this almost perfect stranger. Her slender fingers caressing the coffee cup, the curves of her face floating through space, her half smile going to three quarters, and then, without warning, her guard drops. And for the first time, I see her eyes and catch a flicker of darkness that I'd somehow missed before now. And suddenly I know that stopping off at Jim's coffee shop at 3:33 in the morning is the last in a long line of things that never should have happened. I throw open the bathroom door and rush inside, my eyes taking a moment to adjust to the steam-shrouded candlelight. I see that her head has fallen back and to the side, but it's above the water, and the water is crystal clear, and she has virgin wrists. She's fast asleep, and absolutely breathtaking. I linger there for just long enough so that I'll be able to remember this picture forever. And just as I'm about to leave, I notice that right above where her legs come together, there's a small tattoo. I move closer to get a better look. And when I do, I know that I'll spend the rest of my life wondering how it got there and what it means. It's four words. Four words that ask a very simple question that I'll never know the answer to. Do you believe me?